This is a Capricorn FM podcast.
This grade 12 lesson is proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more providing quality education.
Good evening, my lovely learners. I'm Mr. Majia SR, attached to Texila Secondary School. We are meeting again. Maybe before I forget, on Sunday, maybe just jot this one down. On Sunday, at 14 to 15 hour, I'll be presenting another chapter. So I was busy teaching a particular group of learners at a particular school. So because we're busy with E&I, I also told them that maybe we'll deal with the endocrine system. But I think the one that is relevant is nervous system, because the three chapters, that is nervous system, E&I, collectively they constitute what we call a response to human. That is 54 marks. Very, very important. But on Sunday, I'll be dealing with endocrine system. I know you are very exhausted right now because many learners are involved in different camps, spring camps, and then. But the most important thing is that we need to push. We need to push. I know it's hard. If I put myself in your boots, I realize that no, indeed, it is very tiresome and exhausting. So, but they normally say it takes only 1% of inspiration and 99% of perspiration for one to succeed. Perspiration meaning to sweat, meaning that we must work very hard. Hard work pays. Now, let us start with nervous system. Like I said, on Sunday I'll be dealing with the endocrine system. And then nervous system, because many learners are having a challenge with regard to this chapter, and it's very, very simple and straightforward. Remember, nervous system is brought forth by the nerve cells. You must just have this knowledge in your mind to say it is brought forth by the nerve cells. And then these nerve cells are called the neurons. Now, we're going to classify neurons according to two perspectives, in fact. The first one is classification of neurons according to their structure. Then the other one will be classification of neurons according to their function. Now, if we classify this according to their structure, in fact, we are checking how they are built. In other words, when you look at a particular structure, you need to know that this is unipolar neuron. Why do you say it's unipolar neuron? Remember, uni means one, meaning that you are going to see something. When you look at the particular diagram, you are going to see, like for argument's sake, to give an example, to be more precise with regard to this one. We've got the one outgrowth from the cell body. Now, when you say one outgrowth, that one, remember, this is unipolar neuron, and I said uni means one. So meaning that, how do we define unipolar neuron? That is the neuron that has only one outgrowth from the cell body. So in other words, when we have drawn the structure of the unipolar neuron, obviously we're going to see this diagram to say, okay, this one has got only one outgrowth from the cell body. Then you'll be able to identify that this is unipolar neuron. Then bipolar neuron, which is the second one, under classification of neurons according to their structures. The second one is called bipolar neuron, and bi means two. So in other words, with regard to this one, you are going to see two outgrowth branching from the cell body. Two outgrowth from the cell body. Then the other one is called multipolar neuron. Multipolar neuron, multi meaning many. This one has got many outgrowths from the cell body. Many outgrowths from the cell body. So, for argument's sake, in this case, we are going to have the dendrites. Maybe rather that we've got 4 or 5 types of dendrites, and also have the axon. So, can you see that these are many outgrowths from the cell body? Now, sometimes the examiner is going to request you to classify neurons according to their function, or maybe they may end up asking a lot of questions based on the structure of the neuron, more especially according to the function. Or sometimes you may also be requested to give the function of the neurons that are going to be classified according to their functions now. In this case, I want you to draw the following. Draw a square and then write receptor. Now, from that square, draw a line moving upward. Then, but it should be slanting. But it should be slanting upward. Now you are going to write, you draw another square, you write CNS. Remember, this CNS is abbreviation, that is central nervous system. And then you also draw another line emanating from the one that have, from the square that we have just drawn, where you wrote CNS. Then it should slant towards the right-hand side. Then you are going to draw another box. You are going to write effectors. Effectors. Now, remember, when you check the first box where I said write receptor, you may also write example, or you may end up writing sense organs, and then e.g. you write skin. Then the second box where I said write CNS, which stands for central nervous system, in brackets you may write brain and spinal cord. Then the last box where I said write effectors, you are going to write muscles and glands. Now, between the first box and the second box, draw a line. Then you write sensory neuron. On that note, maybe before we even continue, this is the sensory neuron. Now, you are going to write it down to say one. You write sensory neuron. Now, you are going to be requested to mention or to give the function of the sensory neuron. And then it's like they did not know how to name this neuron. But they said no, because it is transmitting nerve impulses from the sense organ. Remember, receptor said sense organs, e.g. skin. Because it's transmitting nerve impulses from the sense organ, let us call it sensory neuron. Do you see how easy it is? Sensory from the word sense. So you don't have to cram this one. Now, inside the second box, just write, draw one line and write connector neuron. So in other words, this neuron is going to connect this sensory neuron and another neuron. Then that neuron will be moving from the second box, which is the CNS, to the third box, which is the effector. Now you draw another line also, like I indicated, from the CNS to the effectors. Now that line that is moving from the CNS to the effectors, you write motor neuron. So in other words, you are having the sensory neuron. Number two, you have the connector neuron. Why connector neuron? It connects the sensory and the motor neuron. Number three, that is the motor neuron. As simple as that, already you have got three types of neurons. Now, when examiner says, explain the functions of the sensory neuron, or the function of connector neuron, the function of motor neuron, the sensory neuron is simply saying, it transmits nerve impulses from the receptor or sense organs to the central nervous system because it's found between these two boxes. Now let us skip the connector neuron and deal with the motor neuron. Then the motor neuron transmits nerve impulses from the CNS, meaning the second box, which is made up of the CNS, which is the brain and spinal cord, to the effector. Then the other one is the connector neuron. Remember, it's found between the two neurons. That is the sensory neuron and the motor neuron. Many learners make a mistake in this case now. They normally say the connector neuron connects the sensory neuron and the motor neuron because it is found between the sensory and motor neuron. Partially, are correct. But now, the function that we're supposed to give here, it should be based on transmission of nerve impulses. The verb there is transmit. But the object in this case is nerve impulses. So you must tell us about transmission of nerve impulses from one point to the next. Now, the other point that I want to bring forth here is about, remember, we're done with this classification of neurons according to their structure and also according to their function. When you check, it's like we're having six types of neurons, whereas it is not true. There are not six types of neurons. There are three, in fact, because number one is like we've got unipolar, bipolar, multipolar, sensory, connector neuron, and also motor neuron. In fact, the three main neurons are sensory, connector neuron, and motor neuron. So when you say unipolar or bipolar or multipolar. Then we're dealing with the shapes of these three types of neurons, the sensory, the motor, and also the connector. So now it is very vital for you to make sure that you understand the following, because sometimes examiner may end up saying, draw the structure of a unipolar neuron. Then if he says, draw the structure of a unipolar neuron, you know that it is that neuron that has got only one outgrowth from the cell body. But as much as I keep on saying, we've got different questions, but same answers, like 7 plus 3 is equal to 10, 9 plus 1 is equal to 10, 5 plus 5 is equal to 10. What we are teaching is this 10, but questions are set in different ways. So the other way in which the examiner may end up asking questions based on what I've just outlined here, he may end up saying, draw the structure of the sensory neuron. So you need to know that the sensory neuron, its shape is unipolar. And then in some instances, some books, they talk about the bipolar neuron or connector neuron being bipolar. But what we are 100% certain is about the motor neuron, that it is also multipolar. So in other words, if an examiner says draw the structure of multipolar neuron or the motor neuron, it's one and the same thing, meaning that motor neuron, it's multipolar, shape is multipolar. Now, from there, there are some of the things that we need to know from the from the neurons, because examiner sometimes is going to request you to draw this type of neurons. Now, if he says draw this type of neurons, sometimes he also requests you to indicate the direction. You must know that always the direction is moving from the dendrites and then away from the dendrites. In other words, along the axon. So you need to know the direction of nerve impulses. Now, sometimes the examiner is going to request you to give the functions of different parts that are attached to these neurons. For example, maybe examiner may end up saying, what is the function of the dendrites? Then the dendrites receive impulses into the cell body. Don't forget this one. Dendrites receive impulses into the cell body. Now the axon, you use formula A is equal to A. In other words, the axon transmit impulses away from the cell body. In other words, the other one transmit impulses into the cell body, but the other one transmit nerve impulses away from the cell body. As simple as that. Now, we also have the myelin sheath. So this myelin sheath, the main function of myelin sheath is to insulate nerve fibers. And after insulating these nerve fibers, this accelerates the transmission of nerve impulses. So sometimes they normally give you the particular disorder that is attached to this to say if the myelin sheath is damaged, which disorder do you think is going to occur? So that is, you are going to check the multiple sclerosis. In fact, under this chapter of nervous system, you deal with, we've got Alzheimer disease and also multiple sclerosis. So with regard to this one, if the myelin sheath is damaged, meaning that this is going to cause what we call the multiple sclerosis. Now, the other point that I want to bring forth here is about the node of Ranvier. You must also know the node of Ranvier. So if examiner says, what is the function of the node of Ranvier? You simply say it accelerates nerve transmission as impulses jump from one node to another. So in other words, these neurons, as they jump from one neuron to another, they become accelerated by this part of node of Ranvier. Then the last one is the neurilemma. Then this one repairs and regenerates damaged neuron. It's like a mechanic. It repairs and regenerates damaged neurons. Now, although we're not discussing endocrine system, sometimes examiner may end up asking you to tabulate the difference between nervous and endocrine system. Remember, although I have already explained this endocrine system in the past, even if because I told you that I'm still going to repeat this on Sunday, because many learners, I'm dealing with those chapters that many learners are saying that troublesome or they are challenging. So, number one, you're going to say, under nervous system, the response is very fast. Or when we talk about short-lived responses for nervous system. But for endocrine system, it's longer lasting responses. And then under nervous system again, impulses are transmitted along neurons. But under endocrine system, hormones are transmitted by blood. And then for point number three, under nervous system, reaction is very fast, or it's at a very fast speed, and then whereas endocrine system is slow speed. Now, the last one here, messengers are neurotransmitters. The neurotransmitter, for argument's sake, we've got serotonin or also acetylcholine, although when I checked your exam guideline, learners are no longer requested to know to give the names of these neurotransmitters, acetylcholine and serotonin. But the only thing that we're supposed to write is that neurons are messengers are neurotransmitters. And then the last one is messengers are hormones under endocrine system. So when we come back from break, we are going to make sure that I explain to you the transmission of these nerve impulses. And then from there, we are going to also check the significance of synapse and central nervous system as a whole, and also the other types of nervous system. Thank you. Welcome back, my lovely learners. As I already indicated, that we are going to deal with the transmission of nerve impulses to check how these nerve impulses are transmitted from one neuron to another. Remember, between the two neurons, there is a gap. That gap is called the synapse. But the question is, how are nerve impulses transmitted from one neuron to another, because there's a gap. Now, remember, neurons are interconnected to form a continuous conduction system throughout the whole body. Now, the axon of one neuron connects with the dendrites of another neuron, although I told you that there's a gap between this. However, the successive neurons are not in direct contact with each other, as I've already indicated. They are separated by a small gap, and the small gap is called the synapse. Now, the nerve impulses move along the axon to the synaptic nerves. Remember, towards the end of the neuron, more especially the axon, there's what we call the synaptic nerve, and then which are found on the terminal branches. So now, that's why I said the nerve impulses move along the axon to the synaptic nerve of the terminal branches, and then thereafter, this is what is going to happen. In each synaptic nerve are many synaptic vesicles. And then these vesicles are filled up with neurotransmitters, like I indicated previously. These neurotransmitters are called acetylcholine or serotonin. Acetylcholine or serotonin. There are we also have what we call the mitochondria. And then remember, wherever you see mitochondria, you think of energy. So this mitochondria, they supply energy for transmission. Then the neurotransmitters that I've been talking about, they bridge the gap between the two neurons temporarily so that nerve impulses can move across the gap. As simple as that. Now from there, but sometimes examiner may request you to give the significance of the synapse now. It's very vital. And where do you get this? If you check your exam guideline, you realize that you are requested to make sure that you also give the significance of the synapse. So it's very vital for you to know this. Normally, they want one, but if by any chance they end up needing three, let me start with the first one that is very vital. If examiner says give one significance of synapse, you simply say impulses can only move in one direction. That is the key. That is the main one. So in other words, if they say give one significance, you are going to give this one. But if examiner is going to request you to give three, the first one is this one where I said impulses can only move in one direction. But the second one is that impulses can be transmitted to more than one neurons at a synapse. It's very vital to realize that indeed nerve impulses can be transmitted to many neurons, although they are emanating from one neuron. Now, the other point is that insignificant stimuli are filtered out to prevent overloading of brain. Insignificant stimuli are filtered out to prevent overloading of brain. It's like when you, for argument's sake, the feel of a shoes on your feet, you can hardly recognize that you are able to feel something, because otherwise, if your brain is going to be adhere to, or maybe to a certain extent, you realize that time and again the brain is informed about each and every information, that we are going to have a problem. I was giving this example. I was liaising with our principal, Mr. Ramar, because sometimes when learners were making a lot of challenges to a certain extent, we ended up saying, no, you must make sure that you, number one, you consult with your class teachers. Then from there is then that you are going to go to your HODs. And then from there is then that you are going to go to the deputy principal. Ultimately is then that you are going to consult with the principal. Because if each and every, because we have got almost 1,400 and something learners. So if each and every learner or each and every program is going to be submitted to the principal, then ultimately is going to be exhausted. This is exactly what is happening. To say insignificant stimuli are filtered out to prevent overloading of the brain. So meaning that the only important parts that, or important information that is supposed to be transmitted to the brain, the synapse make sure that it's like an HOD maybe. It only reports the things that are very vital. Now we've got the second part, which is called the central nervous system. Then maybe you can write this down. I'll finish with the central nervous system, but just write this down. We've got the central nervous system, CNS. The second one is the peripheral nervous system. Peripheral nervous system. The last one is autonomous nervous system. Autonomous nervous system. So don't forget, make sure that you know something about the central nervous system, the autonomous nervous system, and the peripheral nervous system. So now let me start with this. We'll finish with the central nervous system. Let us start with this simpler ones. That is the peripheral nervous system and autonomous nervous system. If you check your exam guideline, you are not supposed to learn a lot of things. There are a lot of information that you are supposed to, that you may end up coming across with. So, number one, you are not supposed to learn a lot of things, because ultimately I was informing some learners that I've been teaching today to say, normally, during final examination, although you are going to use different types of books, but make sure that you use your exam guideline, because there are a lot of books that I cannot mention names now, that have got a lot of information which is very, very relevant. But the challenge is you realize that maybe when you check exam guideline, they are no longer featuring anywhere now. Because, like for argument's sake, when they talk about balance and also hearing, in the past for balance, or let me start with hearing, or in fact balance, because I was talking about semicircular canal having the endo lymph, then ampulla having the cristae, and then utriculus and circulus having the maculae. So in the past, this maculae, you were supposed to know that it has got the otolith, the hair cells, and the nerve cell. Now, nowadays, you are not supposed to, because immediately you think of otolith and whatever, dragging the hair cells to the opposite direction, you are going to tell a lot of things which are correct, but we may end up putting zero because this is not according to the exam guideline. So make sure that when you study a lot of information, you must also align yourself with the exam guideline, because exam guideline is the guideline that is used by examiner to set. Now, with peripheral nervous system, the only thing that you are supposed to know here is that peripheral nervous system consists of the cranial nerves. Write down the cranial nerves. Number two, it also has what you call the spinal nerves, cranial nerves, and also spinal nerves. If you check spinal, but left sense is very easy. When you talk about cranial nerves, let me start with the spinal nerves. These are nerves that are connected to the spinal cord, spinal and spinal. Spinal nerves connected to the spinal cord. Just that, then you're fine. Then cranial nerves, they are connected to the brain. remember, we don't say brain nerves. We simply say cranial nerves. Why? Because the cranium or the brain is protected by the cranium. The brain is protected by the cranium. Then that bone that covers the brain, which is called the cranium. Now we're going to talk about the nerves that are connected to the brain to say these are cranial nerves. Then you are done with peripheral nervous system. Now, the second point that I want to bring forth is autonomous nervous system. With autonomous nervous system, you are not supposed to learn a lot of things here. Number one, you need to know that autonomous nervous system is made up of sympathetic division or two main parts. The first one is sympathetic and not sympathetic. There are some learners who write sympathetic. I say it sympathetic. Then the other one is parasympathetic. This one I also explained it in the past to say, when we say parasympathetic, the word para means depending on. So in other words, we've got the parasites. Parasites, that are those organisms that depend on other organisms, they benefit, whereas those other organisms are harmed. Now, when we say parasympathetic, so para meaning parasite, and then parasites normally they decrease. They don't sympathize with you. They don't give you anything extra. Then immediately see any activity where they talk about decreasing, then you are just going to say, if examiner says, which type of autonomous nervous system is indicated by the outlined here? Number one, immediately they say the part of autonomous nervous system. There's nothing that we're going to give us except sympathetic or parasympathetic. But when they talk about decreasing, then you know that that is parasympathetic. But when they talk about increasing, it's like when somebody is supposed to buy Panichao and then you realize that he's saving only 8 rand and then maybe it's 20 rand. Then you give him or her 12 rand. Can you see that you are sympathizing with that particular person? Now, with sympathetic, you increase. So this is how you are going to know the truth. Sympathetic, you increase. Parasympathetic, like parasite, you decrease. So now the question is, we don't know what the examiner is going to set here. But what we know is that we have given you the main principle. Then it is up to you to make sure that at least you don't cram, you understand what we're talking about. So examiner may give you a lot of activities. Then the first one, maybe, if he says the part of autonomous nervous system that increase the rate of heartbeat, increase, then that is sympathetic. Or the part of autonomous nervous system that increases blood pressure. The fact that we're talking about increase, then you're going to say sympathetic. Or that dilates the pupil. To dilate, meaning that the pupil's diameter is increased. So that's, you're going to talk about sympathetic. But maybe to give two complementary answers or statements that correspond with one that I've just outlined. Under parasympathetic, if examiner says the part of autonomous nervous system that decreases the rate of heartbeat, decrease, that is parasympathetic. Or that decreases the blood pressure, that is also parasympathetic. Or that constricts the pupil. In other words, remember when the diameter of the pupil constrict, meaning that it is becoming narrower and then meaning that it decreases. So that is parasympathetic. So we don't know what examiner is going to say, but immediately examiner says the part of autonomous nervous system. You check us whether it's increase or decrease. If it's about increasing, then you say sympathetic. If it's about decreasing, then you say it's parasympathetic. Now, we're done with the two parts of nervous system, that is peripheral and autonomous nervous system. Now, the last one, which is the main one now, it is central nervous system. Central nervous system. Remember, central nervous system, it is made up of brain and spinal cord. So in other words, with regard to brain and spinal cord, you need to know the following, because I'm sure during trial examination, there was one of the questions that was asked based on the protection of the brain. It's like also the spinal cord. The brain is protected by, number one, the cranium. You get one mark for that. It is also protected by the three meninges. those membranes are called meninges, but you need to know those membranes. I normally abbreviate them as DAP, D-A-P, DAP. D for the dura mater, A for the arachnoid, and then P for the pia mater. The arachnoid, the dura mater, the arachnoid, and the pia mater. Now, it is also, in other words, but when you say you are going to check the marks, if maybe examiner says 3 marks, immediately say cranium, then you get a mark. Immediately say the brain is also protected by the meninges, you also get a mark. And then the third one, you're also going to talk about the cerebrospinal fluid. Cerebrospinal fluid, then you also get another mark. Now, remember we're dealing with central nervous system, that is brain and spinal cord. I started with the brain. But the spinal cord also is protected by these three membranes, the meninges, the dura mater, the arachnoid, and also the pia mater. Now, sometimes examiner, because I'm dealing with the brain now, from there we're going to deal with spinal cord and also check the reflex action and reflex arc. Now, with regard to cerebrum, because the brain is made up of many, it consists of almost 7 parts of the brain. Number one is cerebrum, which is the largest part of the brain. Then we also have the cerebellum, which sometimes is regarded as the little brain. Normally, in the past, they used to put this in the inverted commas to say cerebellum is one of the brain that is regarded as the little brain. We also have the part of the brain that is next to the spinal cord, which is called the medulla oblongata. When we were still at Marking Center, there was one learner, because these are the learners that call themselves Mapara. Normally, when we present, they don't avail themselves in class. So, medulla oblongata, he said, duulabo mungata, instead of medulla oblongata. So, that is medulla oblongata. Practice it time and again. It's not duulabo mungata, it's medulla oblongata. And then the other one that is just found above the pituitary gland, it is called the hypothalamus. Now, we also have the other one that is C-shaped, that is found between the two parts of the cerebrum, and then this is called the corpus callosum. Now, but just between the corpus callosum and the hypothalamus, that's what we call the thalamus. And then the last part, if you check its shape, it's like P, and just next to the medulla oblongata, it is called the pons. In some books, they talk of pons varoli. Now, the other point that I want to bring forth with regard to this type of brain, you must know that the gray matter, I've written something about the gray matter versus the white matter. Both the brain and spinal cord consist of gray matter and also the white matter. You need to know one here. In the spinal cord, the gray matter is on the inside, whereas the white matter is on the outside. You need to know one, because the other one is just the opposite. For argument's sake, in the brain, the gray matter on the inside, outside, whereas the white matter, it's on the outside. So you need to know this. Now, the other point that we want to bring forth is about the functions of cerebrum. You must know the function of cerebrum, cerebellum, medulla oblongata, and also hypothalamus. For hypothalamus, you can write this formula, SEAT, P-W, SEAT, PW, then S for sleep. Immediately feel like slumbering, just know that that is hypothalamus. Then E is for emotion. Immediately become emotional, that is hypothalamus. And then A for appetite. And then T for thirst. Another T for temperature. Then that P is for pressure, that is blood pressure. And then W is for water control. So in other words, this water control is brought forth by the hypothalamus. Then you must also know the function of medulla oblongata. Then with regard to medulla oblongata, we look at its position. Medulla oblongata, it's found between the spinal cord and other parts of the brain. And for that reason, you don't have to cram. You simply say it conducts impulses from spinal cord to the higher parts of the brain and vice versa. Then the last one, you are going to say it contains reflex centers. And then these reflex centers are responsible for breathing and regulation of the heartbeat. and also dilation and constriction of the blood vessels. You can also talk about salivation and also swallowing. But the most important thing, as long as we shall have written, it contains the reflex centers, then you'll be fine. So when we come back from break, we'll be dealing with cerebellum and also cerebrum. Thereafter, we'll also deal with spinal cord and the reflex arc and reflex action. Welcome back, my lovely learners. Before break, I was talking about the functions of the brain. Remember, I said the central nervous system is made up of brain and spinal cord. And then for the brain, I also indicated that it is protected by meninges and also the cranium and cerebrospinal fluid. And then the other point that I brought forth with regard to the brain, I said we've got seven parts of the brain: cerebrum, cerebellum, medulla oblongata, hypothalamus, thalamus, pons, and also corpus callosum. But you are supposed to know the functions of the four main parts of the brain. That is hypothalamus, which I've already outlined to say you need to know the functions of hypothalamus to, by using the abbreviation or mnemonic device, CTPW, that is S for sleep, E for emotion, and then A for appetite, T for temperature, and then another T for thirst, then P for pressure, that is blood pressure, and W for water control. Then with regard to the medulla oblongata, I said you need to know its position. The fact that it's situated between the spinal cord and other parts of the brain, you may simply say, or safe to say, it transmits nerve impulses from the spinal cord to other parts of the brain and vice versa. Vice versa is Greek word meaning the other way around. Now, the other function of medulla oblongata, I said, it contains the reflex centers responsible for breathing and also regulation of the heart. I'm sure you still remember when we're busy with homeostasis to say, when there's too much CO2 in the bloodstream, the carotid arteries in the neck are stimulated, then message is sent to medulla oblongata that has got the cardiovascular center for the heart and also the respiratory center that is for breathing. So I'll also deal with it because now we are done with the whole syllabus. I'm just revising everything. Remember, we're trying to make sure that we transfer information from the what we call the short-term memory to the long-term memory by repeating this information time and again so that ultimately when you get into the exam, you must be well prepared. Now, the other function is the other function that we're going to focus our attention on is the function of cerebellum. The school that I was teaching today, learners, I told them that L is equal to L. That is, if we're dealing with balance, then cerebellum, because it has got L, then it is responsible for balance. Whereas cerebrum, R is equal to R, means that cerebrum for hearing. Now, with cerebellum, you are going to say it coordinates, number one, or let me start with the first one. It maintains balance. It maintains balance. That's number one. Or in some books, they say it maintains muscle tone, balance, and equilibrium. It maintains muscle tone, balance, and equilibrium. Then number two, it coordinates voluntary movements. So please, don't confuse this with the function of cerebrum. I'll tell you something based on cerebrum because both of them deal with voluntary. But this one, cerebellum coordinates voluntary movements. Now, with regard to cerebrum, remember cerebrum is the largest part of the brain. Now, the first point here, let me also start with this issue of voluntary. Now, this one, it controls all voluntary actions. Remember, I'm not dealing with voluntary movements now. It controls voluntary actions. So, in other words, when you check the function of cerebrum and cerebellum, this one of controlling the voluntary, it's like a common factor. But the most important point that we're supposed to take into cognizance is to say or to realize that cerebrum controls all voluntary actions, whereas cerebellum coordinates voluntary movements. Now, with regard to cerebrum, because like I indicated, that is the largest part of the brain. Now, it also deals with serious matters. The other one is that it controls the high thought processes, such as memory, judgment, and reasoning. When you reason, and then maybe your parent end up giving judgment, that's just know that both of you are using cerebrum. And then memory is also cerebrum. Can you see that it deals with important things? Now, the last one is it receives and interprets all sensations. It receives and interprets, not just receiving only, receiving and interpreting all sensations such as smell, touch, sight, hearing, and taste. Touch, smell, sight, hearing, and taste. Now, this is all about the cerebrum, which is the largest part of the brain. So it's very vital for you to make sure that you revise this time and again. Now, the other thing that examiner may end up requesting you is to tabulate the difference or maybe to differentiate between reflex action and reflex arc. Reflex action and reflex arc. Then with reflex action, again, when you touch the outer surface, you don't think first before you remove your hand. You remove your hand automatically or immediately. Then can you see that that's the fast and automatic response? That is reflex action. So in other words, you are going to say, when you define reflex action, is the rapid automatic response. Remember, you are reacting to a stimulus. Then you are going to say, is the rapid automatic response to a stimulus received by an organ or any other receptor. You'll check as well. If it is 3 marks, you need to say rapid automatic response, then you get a mark for that. To a stimulus, you get another mark for stimulus. Received by an organ or any other receptor. Remember, like when you touch the whole surface, although I'm still going to explain the whole part of reflex action, when you remove your hand, remember the heat receptor in the skin becomes stimulated. Now, that heat is like stimulus. Now, the other one is the reflex arc. This is the path taken by the impulses. The path taken by the impulses in bringing about a response to a stimulus. The path taken by impulses in bringing about a response to a stimulus during reflex action. So I was arguing with one of my learners. She was saying, somewhere they talk about the functional unit of a nervous system, and then also the structural unit. Then when we talk about the structural unit, is then that we're going to talk about the neuron. But the functional unit is not going to be the neuron. So make sure that you also revise all those terminologies. Now, the other one is the reflex arc. With regard to this one, don't worry, you need to know the following. Number one, you must have spinal cord. Number two, you need to have 3 neurons. Remember, I said the sensory, the connector, and the motor neuron. Then the other one, you must have the effectors and also the receptors. Just that. Now, the question is, how do we explain this? Number one, you need to have the spinal cord, like I've already indicated. So now, when you touch the whole surface, number one, you need to know that something in the skin is going to be stimulated. Then, because that is the hot surface, then the receptor that is going to be stimulated in the skin, that is the heat receptor. Remember, the skin has got various types of receptors. Now, like during trial examination, they talked about the finger that is prickled by something. Now, you don't talk about... I've forgotten whether maybe it was the finger that has been prickled by something, but the most important thing that I want to bring forth here is about, it was not about the finger that is put over a burning candle. It was about the skin that has been prickled by something, by a needle or of some sort. But now the most important thing that I want to bring forth here, if examiner says explain reflexation, number one, you must check as whether maybe it's about the pain receptor or the heat receptor. Now, if you touch the whole surface, number one, there's a receptor that is going to be stimulated there in the skin. That is the heat receptor. Now, number one, you're going to say the heat receptor in the skin is stimulated. And then immediately after being stimulated, those stimulus are converted into nerve impulses. The stimulus is converted into nerve impulses. The nerve impulses are going to be transmitted by the sensory neuron. Why sensory neuron? Because this sensory neuron is the neuron that transmits impulses from the sense organ. Now, immediately say sensory neuron transmit nerve impulses, then you're going to get a mark for sensory neuron. And then immediately say from the sense organs, you get another mark. Through the dorsal root into the spinal cord, you get two marks there. Now, in the spinal cord, you're going to say the sensory neuron makes synaptic contact with the connector neuron. You get a mark for sensory neuron make synaptic contact with the connector neuron. You get a mark for synaptic contact, and then you get another mark for connector neuron. Then the connector neuron in turn makes synaptic contact with the motor neuron. You also get a mark for the motor neuron. Now, the motor neuron is going to transmit nerve impulse away from the spinal cord into the effector. In this case, effector, remember, is the muscles or gland. Now, from there, the muscles or the hand is going to, if it was about the hand, then the hand is retracted from that hot surface. Then in other words, like you have moved your hand from the hot surface. In a way, mean that you are assisting yourself as far as danger is concerned. So it's very vital. That is the significance of the spinal cord. Very, very vital. Because sometimes examiner may end up saying, give two functions of the spinal cord. One of the functions of spinal cord, you're going to say, it serves as the center for reflex actions. It serves as the center for reflex actions. Number two, you are going to say it conducts impulses between the brain and the receptor and the effectors. It conducts impulses between the brain and receptors and the effectors. Very, very simple. Now, maybe questions based on what I've just presented, so that you know how questions are going to be asked, although you are going to check from different books. In many instances, you realize that sometimes I was telling my learners to say, when examiners said this type of questions, there's what we call the low-order question, the middle-order questions, and the high-order questions. With the low-order question, when I've been explaining the structure of the or the whole process of reflex arc and the reflex action, because we said the motor neuron transmits nerve impulses away from the spinal cord to the effector. Now, sometimes the examiner is going to say, if it is about the low order question, obviously the examiner is just going to say, what is the function of the motor neuron? You simply say it transmits nerve impulses from the spinal cord to the effector. But now, if you want to set it in the form of high grade, it's going to say, if motor neuron C, let me say that spinal cord was motor neuron C, then say if C is cut at point X, maybe it indicates that that motor neuron is damaged. Now it's going to say, explain what would happen. Now you're going to say, I was telling my learner, the learner that I was teaching today, to say, normally if the car that your father is using or your parents are using, then that car maybe in one way or the other experience some breakdown. Obviously, let me say that the function of that particular car is to transport you from home to school. Now, if it has a breakdown, obviously, you are not going to be transported to school, because the main thing that transports you from home to school now had a breakdown. So that is very important. Now, if we talk about this one, in the form of high order questions, you are just going to give the function in a negative form. If they say, what is the function of, or if maybe the motor neuron is damaged, how do you think the reflex action is going to be? Or I'm just paraphrasing this. Then you are just going to say the motor neuron won't be able to transmit nerve impulses from the spinal cord to the effectors. Can you see that this is the function of motor neuron in a negative form? Very simple. Those are regarded as the high-order questions. It's like when you talk about the when we're busy with the ear, the main function of the eustachian tube, remember, it is to balance air pressure on either sides of the eardrum. So normally examiner may end up saying, then with regard to low order question, it's very simple and straightforward to say what is the function of the eustachian tube. You simply say it balances air pressure on either sides of the eardrum. But examiner may end up saying, if the eustachian tube is filled with mucus, what do you think is going to happen, or how do you think the ear is going to be affected? Obviously, you are going to say air pressure on either sides of the eardrum is not going to be balanced. As simple as that. During trial examination, they set one question based on head cold, just to paraphrase it, to say why when somebody is having head cold, it's not supposed to be encouraged to participate in parachute jumping. It's the high-order question, so meaning that you need to sit down and think. You apply the knowledge that you have learned. You don't just cram or reproduce what you have learned here. Now, number one, you are going to say, remember, when somebody is having head cold, obviously is having flu and ultimately is going to have mucus, and then that mucus is going to fill the eustachian tube. So this is exactly what you are going to explain. And then if the eustachian tube is filled with mucus, now it's not going to be able to balance air pressure on either side of the eardrum, and then ultimately the eardrum or the tympanic membrane may end up bursting. Can you see how easy these things are? The most important thing, like I indicated to you, is to say, make sure that whatever question that has been asked, although they are going to give you a lot of scenarios, don't even worry about those scenarios. The only thing that you need to do is to underline the key concept and check exactly what examiner is asking. So, like I indicated, we are going to meet on Sunday at 14 hour to 15 hour. I'll be revising endocrine system and questions that are related to endocrine system for tonight. We're done.
This grade 12 lesson was proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more, providing quality education.
That was a Capricorn FM podcast. For more podcasts, visit capricornfm.co.za.